So welcome to the PMFA Best Practice Operations Call. I am Joel Smith, and I'm a multi-unit franchisee in the Des Moines area. I'm also a John Maxwell certified coach and leadership trainer. And our purpose for these calls are, there's four purposes. One, to have a place where franchisees and multi-unit leaders and managers can connect and learn and teach best practices. Number two, to help owners work on their business and not just in it. And number three, to learn and share systems and strategies that drive profitability. And then number four, to help us learn better ways to recruit, train, and develop our people. And today, we are going to be talking about how to get our young people focused and motivated. And this is a big, big question. It's a big question because it's much more difficult to do that these days than it used to be. So with me today is Mickey Waters, and Mickey is going to co-host this with me today. And so how you doing, Mickey?
I'm excellent today. Thank you.
Mickey owns 8 stores, and she's been a franchisee for 2.5 years, a market leader for PMI for 11.5 years prior to that. So she's been around a little bit, and she's seen young people be motivated. Am I right?
Absolutely.
You've probably seen your share of young people not so focused and motivated, I would guess.
some days. Some days are like that, and then there's just some kids who this just isn't the right job for them.
Yeah. So, Mickey, would you say that in today's day and age that it's more difficult than ever to keep young people focused and motivated?
I think it is, but I believe very strongly in training, in order to keep them engaged and to keep them motivated. My friend Aaron Dake, who's in charge of the Hodge group of stores, he talks about that there, you know, I think what he said is there aren't really any bad employees. Most of the time it comes down to whether they've been trained well and whether the manager and you know, upper management keeps them engaged. And I truly believe in that too.
Right. I think there's a lot of owners, a lot of small business owners that have almost given up on young people. They tend to be a little skeptical and questioning whether they are capable of doing the job well. Unfortunately, the millennials, you know, there's a lot that's been said about millennials in this day and age, and unfortunately, it's not usually very good, and I'm not sure it's all that accurate as well. I personally think that millennials are terrific people. They're different, and they have a different culture that they live in. They have different challenges, but I think the key is that millennials want to connect. They don't want to be managed the way that our parents were managed or led the way that we were led necessarily growing up, but they have a different way. And so I think one of the challenges for owners of small businesses is to figure that out, figure out how to make those connections and how to help the young people become all they can be. So, you know, when we're tackling this question of how to get young people focused and motivated, you know, there are several typical systems or typical practices in place that small businesses like ours and Papa Murphy's would use. I'm going to give a list of these real quick just to kind of spread the net so we can all see kind of what we're looking at. But some of these things would be, you know, incentive plans, bonuses, financial rewards, employee appraisals or self-evaluations. For discipline, it might be write-ups or employee improvement plans, written goals or vision statements, and a term that you like to use is success plans, and I'm interested in that. And a little bit later, I'd like for you to give us a good rundown on what a success plan is and what it looks like. And then, of course, my favorite would be one-on-one coaching. That's what I like to do. So, would you say, Mickey, that no one is going to be able to be really good at all of these different systems and strategies?
I would say that, but I would also say that in our organization, we use all of those. So some may be more comfortable for others. The one thing that is consistent for us, though, we do an appraisal plan, whatever you want to call it, evaluation, success plan, appraisals. We do honor those every 6 months. So everybody's going to have that sit down. But even those, not everybody is comfortable in giving those or getting feedback from them, but we use all of those that you mentioned, all of them.
Yeah, that's important. I think that is important. There tends to be different leaders that maybe have one tool in their tool belt that they're really good at, and mm-hmm. they tend to use that one tool over and over, and they don't necessarily use as many tools as they should. They're not necessarily as equipped. What would be some ways in a multi-unit company like yours or like mine that we could actually spread this out and give people multiple tools so that we can reach as many people as possible?
Well, I think the one thing that we have found is that many hands make light work. So we spread that recognition and that the discussion points or the follow-up over multiple people. So the store manager is involved. If we have an assistant manager or two, because we have some larger stores that have a lot of employees, in our smaller stores, we spread it into our shift supervisors so that everybody takes a part in everybody's growth and everybody's success and everybody's learnings.
Right. I like to call that empowerment.
Yeah.
You know, you're really trying to bring the most out of everybody at each level.
Right.
And that is true.
And one of the things that we are challenged with in the state of Oregon is we're mandated to raise wages every year. So what we, my partners and I have had to do is we're looking at those additional responsibilities and empowerment to make sure that if we're paying somebody $10.75 an hour, that they have additional responsibilities to give value to what we're paying them. Because in my heart, I struggle with paying a 16-year-old $10.75 an hour. So I want that young person to be well-trained, understand their role, and have some empowerment.
Right. It's bad enough when you have a partially trained person making $8 an hour, but if you don't have a fully empowered person, if you have to pay, $10.75 an hour or higher mm-hmm. in some areas, then sure. that makes it that much more difficult.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt. So when it comes to, motivating and keeping people focused, there's a really good book that I've read a couple different times. It's called Drive by Daniel Pink. And in this book, he talks about three main motivations for people, or three main things that drive people to perform or not perform if they're not driven. And those three things, he describes them as, sticks and carrots, and then inspiration. So I think this is really fascinating, because when you think about, sticks, of course, this is more of boundaries and consequences, and carrots would be more of incentives and rewards, of course, and then inspiration is the way to try to tap into that person to help them become the best they can be. Mm-hmm. And really, I think one of the mistakes I made earlier on several years ago was that I wanted to bypass the sticks and the carrots, and I wanted to go straight to the inspiration. And what I found was, if I'm too heavy on inspiration, then I'm gonna miss out on really setting good boundaries and consequences, or I may miss out on really rewarding people well enough. Mm-hmm. And so I've found that in order to have a good balance of all of these, I like to call this the tripod effect, that we really have to have all of that. We need to have the boundaries and consequences in place, and we have to have the rewards in place, but then we also have to have an element of inspiring people and connecting with people. So give me an idea, like in your company, Mickey, what would be some of the ways that you guys really reach out to try to inspire people in your company, as opposed to just directing them with sticks and carrots?
Well, people, it's very clear when we hire people, we have an employee handbook. It's reviewed by the area supervisor who's doing the orientation with every single employee. So that sticks part comes in. They know what our expectations are. They know what our rules are.
Right.
The carrots outlined again in the employee handbook, and we talk about them regularly. We have a scholarship program. We have employee meal program. So we talk about that in the handbook. We remind kids about it all the time. As far as inspiration, we also talk about growth in the stores. Anytime we know that we're going to have people moving up and moving out, going on to their other forever job, because I tell people when we hire them, I want this to be a forever job. Or I want it to be the forever job skills job, because they can take this and go work anywhere. I want them to be that well trained that they can take these skills. So we, you know, talk about the ability to move up. We mentioned people who are already, who have been in the company and who have moved up and are now managing, you know, mini stores or managing our high volume stores. We also talk about the opportunity to maybe move to another town if an opportunity comes up, if they go through our training programs. So we try to use all of that from day one, and it starts with our orientation, and it's included in the employee handbook.
Oh, that's excellent. That's terrific. You're right. Having that employee handbook or that orientation manual or whatever you want to call it is really important. Unfortunately, Papa Murphy's doesn't really supply that anymore, and so we're kind of on our own to come up with that. But so I think that's great, first of all, that you have a foundational piece that you use that's not relative. It's not hearsay. It's not just rumors. It's not what we think somebody says needs to be done. You've got it all on paper, so it's black and white.
And I think the other key to it is that on our orientations, we have two people that do those orientations. And if one of them isn't available, then I'll do the orientation. But the message is consistent. So the, you know, those shifts, excuse me, the area supervisors do those orientations. They have the same script, the same orientation manual. They go through all that information. And then because we have stores in six different cities, I make it a point, as I do payroll and review the employee list, I make sure that I see their paperwork that goes in, but then I put in my calendar that when I go to that store, I make sure that, you know, I'm looking for that new employee so I can introduce myself. And then I just kind of, you know, I use kind of a tickler, you know, have you been able to use the employee meal discount? You know, did you hear about, you know, are you in school? Did you hear about our scholarship program? Does your uniform fit okay? Did you need another shirt? Or, you know, do you have any questions that maybe came up after your orientation? I really try to make it a point to get with every new person. And with eight stores, I can still do that.
That's great. So what I hear in there is I hear accountability. First of all, you limit these tasks to a small number of people that are qualified, so you don't let that get out and just let anybody do it. Yeah. And then number two, there's a little bit of follow-up as well. So you're visiting the stores, you're getting in, you're talking to people, you're asking questions. That does provide a little bit of accountability for your managers or for your supervisors that do the orientations or the managers that do the training. And that's all really important. Yeah. And that's great. So what's your thoughts? How would you deal with a person that comes into your company maybe as a general manager and tends to maybe rely on the stick side? Maybe they come from a boss model and you start to see that. How do you deal with that right away so that it doesn't start to put a dent in your culture?
Well, I have to admit, that hasn't been a challenge for us because we don't hire from the outside our store managers. All of our store managers have moved up with us, so I'm at a bit of a disadvantage there, and maybe that might be something that some other people can speak to. I, you know, my first inclination, even if it's somebody who has moved up and I see that they're starting to get a little bit angry, if you will, is, you know, sitting them down and having a discussion about, you know, what job responsibilities have they taken back from the people that work for them? Because usually that comes from people feeling like they're overwhelmed and overworked. And I make sure that we go back to giving those responsibilities and taking some things off of their plate. And if they aren't the one that needs to do the discipline or needs to do the follow-up, that it's getting done by somebody else so that they don't feel so overwhelmed by those tasks. Quite often that happens.
Okay. Well, hey, I do want to open this up to everyone else on the call, too. So the question today is, how do we get our young people focused and motivated? So for those of you that have had some relative success in this area, we want to know what you're doing in order to get those good results. So if you're on the call, you can hit *6 to unmute yourself, but we would love to hear what you have to say.
You know, we've gone through a big transition, and with that, we've incorporated a lot of different ways to bring a new culture into our company and three stores. I would say one of the things that has really been a strong shift for us is we include crew, junior shift leads, senior shift leads, assistant managers and managers into the interview process. And we have for management, for an assistant manager or manager, which we have hired from outside. In the past, we had not, and we've done a lot of hiring outside recently, is we include a two-step process in the interview. The first is a set of questions that that are not your regular mother's interview questions, and the second is a case study. We do the interview process first, and then the second step is we send a case study to the candidate and give them the floor to make a presentation of how they would manage a situation, a store that's maybe in some disarray. For assistant manager, it's a 30-day plan, and for a manager, it's a 90-day plan. And then we bring in different crew members to be the audience for that presentation. And that has been absolutely amazing because we've had a whole array of different candidates that have brought all kinds of really wonderful, different forms of professionalism and different ideas, and it's given especially crew or junior shift leads kind of that inspiration or that vision of what you can do and what it really takes to run a store. So that's been something that has been really an interesting process. And something that it costs some money, but it has proven itself in a really positive way.
I like that idea of bringing in shift leaders or shift managers for the interview process. We haven't really done that, but I'm going to have to give that some more thought. But that is true. It's hard. It's hard to become a general manager and be good at interviewing and be good at the onboarding process if you've never seen it. And so. So I do like that idea. Have you found that when you promote from within and you've already been exposing your shift leaders to the interview process that becomes more natural for them when they are promoted to general manager?
Yep. You know, this is really something we've been doing in the last 7-8 months. But I mean, like just the other day we had a junior shift lead who, you know, 4 months ago was a crew. And he participated in a candidate presentation. And man, the questions he asked the candidate and the feedback that he gave the candidate about his experience working at Papa Murphy's it should have been recorded. It was brilliant. It was just, he both set the tone for the candidate and also gave the candidate a really good example of what our expectations are of crew, and it's really about, you know, improving your skill set and increasing the skills you have. Kind of like Mickey said, I mean, we're paying $11.25 minimum wage and it's going up. And if you don't have a crew that can do more than just make a pizza, you know, your business is going to fail.
You know, the two hardest things in a small business like this is number one, it's hard to find good people, but then number two, it's hard to develop good people. Because ultimately, good people is the end goal. That's what you need. You have to have good people in order to succeed in this, and motivation is a big part of that. I like what you're doing there. You know, starting a little bit lower on the totem pole, trying to empower people, the shift leaders, in order to get a better vision of what it takes to move up the ladder. I think that is good too. That's there's some carrot in there in the sense that you're holding a carrot out in front of some of your crew leaders and giving them a better vision of what it's going to be like once they get to a higher level. But also you're showing them that what they've experienced and what they're doing is important as well. I think a lot of people at the shift leader level feel like they're not part of the club sometimes.
Yeah.
And I know we've had that experience where, you know, the general managers get to be part of a conference call that you know, the assistants and the shift leaders don't, and we get together for manager meetings or do some training and things. And sometimes the shift leaders and the assistants sometimes don't get as much. So I like that idea, and I'm going to brainstorm a little bit in my company to think about how we can try to get some of our lower management people or even our crew-level people more involved as well. So here's a question, and maybe I'll leave this up for both of you guys if you're interested or anybody else that wants to jump in. So I'm going to be a little bit skeptical just for a second here just to set the stage. So how do we motivate people that don't seem to care about their job? How do we motivate people and get people focused that have a hard time showing up for work on time or wanting to be part of a team player? How do we do that when we have so much of our workforce that's just struggling with motivation? How do we get those people to be something more in our brains than what we see? You know, how do we do that?
Well, for us, it's continued discussion in, you know, progressive behavior appraisal, if you will. We sit down and we have conversations with people trying to figure out what those things are that either we haven't done in training, because generally my experience is it's because we haven't fully trained them or they don't feel like they're trained. And then, after a few of those kind of sessions, Joel, it's not always, we may not be the forever job for them. And so, you know, making some suggestions on, you know, other positions outside of the company that might be better for them. We are in a constant hiring mode. You never know when the right person's going to walk in the door, so we're always hiring. And that may be the case with a lot of people. I know that the Moldahill group is on the call also, and, you know, they have multiple stores, and I'd love to hear what they have to say and what Lori has to say about that too.
It really is about engagement and involving them. You know, when you're a crew person and you come in and you go on the line and start making pizzas, it's very hard to understand how big the business can be or how involved. And it's really, I think, for a young person, maybe it's their first job, the rest of how the business works is hidden to them. It's something that happens behind closed doors or something that happens outside of their realm. And to involve them, I think, is really important. And also, like Mickey, you said, is really that constant feedback. And we have, every employee has a file, and on the, you know, left side of the file is a comms log, and any behavior, whether it's a positive behavior or a negative, is documented in their comms log. And with that, we also have kudos cards that go in their file, and we have, you know, violation cards that go in their file, and it's that kind of constant data and documenting what their behavior is. And we always say we don't reward bad behavior. And it's an easier conversation to have with an employee either at a 30, 60, 90-day review if you've got that kind of documentation and data that you can really go back and track what their performance is so that it doesn't become just an emotional kind of cyclical, I told you so, I've told you this before, this is continuing to happen, but it's actually following a process and procedure about how you are expected, what your performance, what the expectations of your performance. So it becomes a performance issue.
The other thing we are pretty firm about, Joel, is we don't keep bad behavior around. We will work with anybody and train, and anybody who wants to learn more and be engaged. But we don't keep mean people. We don't keep people that do things or say things that are hateful or, you know, putting other people down. We don't cuss in the stores. We don't let other people cuss in the stores. And I know that may sound a little bit pious, but it's just kind of the environment we want to have and to we want people to feel like this is the best place to work. And we want you to tell your parents it's a great place to work, and we want you to invite your grandma in.
Right. Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad that you said, hey, we don't allow bad behavior in the store. Because here's the thing. This is what's strange. People want to work in a great environment, just like you're describing. They want to work in an environment where people are speaking responsibly, where people are acting responsibly and treating each other responsibly. People want to work in a place like that. But if it's not enforced and if it's allowed to happen anyway, people will lower their own standards down to that level.
Right.
And they'll actually become part of an environment that they don't really want to work for.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of a cycle, a downward cycle. And I think that can explain a lot of why stores can have a lot of negative turnover. By the way, the word turnover, I'm sure, Mickey, from what you just described to me, you'll agree with me on this, but I've heard people ask me questions like, what's my turnover rate? and I hate that, because the implication is that if you have a high turnover rate, it's bad. Which, if it's too high, that is bad, of course. But here's something else I know, and this goes right to what you said. If your turnover rate is too low, that's really bad, too. Because if we're keeping our turkeys around, if we're keeping our bad behavior around, our company is going to fail. And so it is important. I tell my managers and the people that I coach that in our company, we plan to turn over the bottom third of our crew on a regular basis. Because if we don't, you know, the infection will stick. Mm-hmm. And of course, we want to try to develop our core crew and get our core crew as deep and get that bench as deep as we can. But if we ever come to the place where we feel like we're fully staffed, that's a dangerous place to be, because there's always people on the bottom of the totem pole that are giving less than their best. And so I like that idea that when there's an infection, we do have to remove it. And I think that is a key for sure. I think more stores struggle not because they terminate too many people. I think most companies fail because they keep too many bad people. Would you agree with that?
I have seen that a lot over the years. And yep. I saw that a lot when I was working for the corporation, because I would visit, many, many stores every single month. And you could see it and you could feel it when you went in to some of them. And you could see the frustration from the franchisee or the managers as they would, go through their visits. So
right.
I do agree with you.
Yeah. Yep, that is definitely one of the biggest struggles for franchisees, and I've seen that as well. People that are just frustrated, they're just kind of running in circles, trying to make up for lost production on their own, where the work falls on their own shoulders, and,
right.
and it's a struggling place. And it's really easy to get into the if you're not careful, it's really easy to get into the stupid employee syndrome. That's what we mm-hmm. call it in our company. It's when the leaders are looking at our employees and we're discrediting them, they're looking at it from a scarcity mindset of there's just not any good people out there. Everybody that I hire tends to not show up for work or whatever the case is. But and there might be a part of that, but we're the ones that set the stage for that. We're the ones that create the culture in our store that's mm-hmm. going to repel those people or be a magnet for people.
Yeah.
So we have a big say so on how employees are motivated, would you say?
I agree 100%. And also the people that come in and apply, people apply where the people are like them. So if you're a quiet kind of person and the people who are working there isn't a lot of talking going on, you may get those kind of applicants going on. You know, in my stores, when you walk in, people are saying hello, people are at the counter, there's chatter going on, and the guests are being taken care of. And if you're the completely quiet and reserved kind of person, you might not apply with me. But also, if people look a certain way, people that look that way apply. And so you have to be careful in all aspects of who's working for you, because you don't want to exclude anybody. But just know that if you have surly people working there, you're probably going to attract surly people applying.
Right. And we can't fix everybody.
No.
Even though we would like to think that sometimes. I went through that early on in my management career where I just thought I could fix them. So I'd hold on to them and I'd try to fix them and I'd get frustrated and I couldn't fix them. And then it didn't end as well as it could. And what I learned is sometimes people just need to go to a different place.
Yeah. I had that exact conversation with a young lady last week. I had her paycheck ready because I knew what the outcome of our conversation was going to be, either her decision or my decision. And what I told her was, this is not working out for our business, and it's not working out for you. You're stressed when you're at work. We don't see the results we need. You're not happy. We're not happy. And here's our options. One of two. I can give you your paycheck today, and you're going to have to tell people that you were terminated. Or you can tell me, Mickey, this just isn't the job for me. It's not what I thought it was. And I want to quit. And she grabbed a hold of me and started crying. I just can't do it. It's just too much for me. I want to quit. And I said, here's your paycheck, honey. You're more than welcome to tell people it just wasn't the job for you and you quit on your own terms. And sometimes that's okay. It's not the forever job for everybody.
Right. Yeah, sometimes the stepping stone is just what we need as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take those kids that come in and work for us for 3 or 4 years and go off to college.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or while they're in college. I love transplants. I always want to tell franchisees, if you've got kids that are going to go to the University of Oregon or any of the Christian colleges here, or, you know, Annie would take them, if they're going to OSU, tell them to come and see us because we work around schedules. We want those people, and we'll send them back to you on Christmas vacation. We'll send them back to you in the summertime, and then you send them back to us when they're going to go to school in the fall.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Send them on down.
Yeah, those are great people to have. And when they come back, they're fresh.
They're fresh
and motivated.
And they bring new ideas.
Right.
Every time they come back and forth, they bring new ideas.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
No grants and scholarships are going to pay for tuition and pizza and gas. So
they
need to work while they're here. We'll take them.
So in the spirit of inspiration, I want to mention one more quick thing, and then we'll probably end this here pretty quickly. But so one thing that I think is important when it comes to leadership, whether you're the owner or you're the general manager or any level of leadership really, that when you're dealing with people that are struggling with motivation or they're struggling with focus, most of the time, I believe that they're struggling with motivation and focus because they don't know what they're capable of. They're kind of in a fixed mindset and they're not sure what they're capable of and they don't know and they're kind of stuck. And I think one of the best things as a leader that we can do is we can help people see what they're capable of. I just had a conversation last week that basically I said to this person, I said, you know, I think I believe in you more than you believe in me. And so, and I've had this conversation with a number of people, and sometimes their eyes kind of light up when I say that, because first of all, everybody wants to know that somebody believes in them, of course. But the thing is when people get that message that, hey, I believe in you, now you need to believe in me, that's the beginning of something that could be good down the road.
Yeah.
And usually it's the beginning of at least a connection and a platform that you can start to build on. And so I would encourage everybody that's listening here to try to focus on a connection with your people, with your leadership group, and set an example of confidence in them and a belief that they are in the right place and they're doing the right things. Paint that picture for them so that they know what to become.
Yeah.
Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely fair, and I had a similar conversation with somebody not too long ago where I said, I wish you could see you through my eyes because I see great things. I think you're awesome. You are so smart. You are so talented, and I'm going to continue to pile stuff on you, so get ready.
Right. People need to be challenged, and they may grumble when they're challenged, but deep down, when you're challenged, you know you're not being challenged without somebody believing you to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, thank you, ladies. I appreciate your time. I do want to maybe officially end the meeting for anybody that needs to go, but we'll stick around here for a couple minutes in case other people want to jump on and ask any questions or chime in. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
So feel free to chime
in.
Go ahead.
I just want to say thank you, Joel, so much for all these training sessions, and Mickey, you for your participation today and your support that you've given to our three stores. It really is has been a key piece to, I think, transitioning or moving through this more difficult time for the brand and for our stores. And it's really served a purpose that I think has been lacking. So thank you.
You're sure. Very welcome. You're very welcome.
Well, we would love to have more ideas from people, too, so feel free to email me directly or give me a call or whatever you know we need to do, but I would love to hear more ideas and of what could be, how we could be helpful.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.